is the Two-Pad Stack, where we dive deep into all things NHL and then some. If it's the Boston Bruins, we talk about the ups, the downs, and everything in between. But we're not stopping there. We're also tossing in some Patriots pigskin, gaming glory, dad jokes, and all things pop culture. Because why the hell not? It's our show. Whether you're a longtime hockey lunatic like us, or just looking for a good time, you're in the right place. This is the Two-Pad Stack. Now your hosts, Ace and Burge.
Welcome to episode 33 of the Two-Pad Stack, powered by the Hockey Podcast Network. Today's episode is also brought to you by DraftKings, promo code THPN. That's THPN for the Hockey Podcast Network. And SeatGeek, promo code 2PADSTACKPOD. That's the number 2, PADSTACK, and POD. Also, remember to check out our website at www.2PADSTACKPOD.com. I'm your host, Ace, alongside Birch, as always. How's it going, Birch?
It's going. It was great up until about an hour ago. We're recording right now. I briefed you a little bit.
Yeah.
Before we started recording, but I'm having probably the worst bedtime night for my 3.5-year-old son that we've had in probably over a year. Kid will not settle down, dude. And it's like a full-fledged tantrum meltdown. Like, I haven't experienced that yet as a dad, where at bedtime, where it's like this, where he's not in a confined crib. So, like, now he can get up and move about the house. I was ready. I came out of there when my wife was on the phone with the in-laws. I come out of his room right before I came down to record with you, and I'm like, I want to throw this kid out the fucking door. I was ready to, like, punch the wall. Like, I'm still – it's not his fault. Like, I get it. But I was just beyond frustrated. Beyond.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, you have some intrusive thoughts when you're dealing with a kid that is just driving you absolutely up the wall. And you're like, oh my God, I can't think that. I can't do that. That's terrible. Yeah. Why am I thinking this? I need to step away. And that's like, when those moments happen, I am exponentially grateful that I have a partner to do this with. And oh, I can only imagine how awful it is being a single parent on your own, because there's no stepping away. There's no pause button. There's no way to collect your thoughts. And I absolutely, anybody that tells me that they're a single parent, like a true single parent, I'm like, hats off to you. You are a fucking saint. You're a godsend. I am 100% in awe of what you did as a parent, because yeah, I can't even compare myself to what you're dealing with, Burge. I didn't have twins, but dealing with, you know, an infant, it's not an easy thing. And those of you out there that have kids, you know exactly what we're talking about. So
yeah, you hit the nail on the head about having the partner, because she's like, I got this. Go downstairs and do your thing. And she's like, I'll handle it.
Yeah, dude. Like, when we went from one to two kids, when we had the shift from zone coverage to man, that's when things got a little bit of dicey. But luckily, our older daughter got to the age where it was easier to kind of just work with her. And now, hell, she's... God, I don't even want to talk about it, man. Like, I thought that she was having her first period and about had a stroke because Amanda was on the road. So I was home with the kids. Actually, no, we were out seeing Dune 2, right? And it's really loud. And I've got Amelia and Aria with me in the movie theater. Aria leans over and she tries saying something to me. She's like, and I thought she said blood. And I was like, oh, fuck me. No, this would fucking happen when the wife is like halfway across the country. Like, that would just be peak, like sitcom style dad right there. Yeah. That it would happen. And like, once I actually heard what she was talking about, I breathed like the largest sigh of relief that could possibly be breathed. But yeah, that was a little bit of a panic. So I'm going to be in a little bit of a different type of tantrum here soon. I think my daughter's going to get into the whole just screaming at the parents stage of you know, puberty and everything. So I'm not exactly stoked for that.
I grew up with two sisters, so I experienced it from a distance. So I somewhat know what you're about to go through, but I don't know what it's like to go through it as a dad.
Yeah, I'm not stoked for it. Yeah, my my week's been interesting. Like I said, Amanda was out in business doing great things, working her way up the corporate ladder, and I have all the respect and appreciation and love for this woman in the world. She's doing what she needs to do, and I'm happy. What I don't like, Burrs, you probably hear about this, and you probably get pissed off with it too. You ever hear these dads that are like, oh, you know, I'm babysitting the kids? You're not babysitting the kids.
No.
They're your fucking kids.
Yeah.
You are just as responsible for those kids as your wife is. Now, your wife may be more maternal and more caring, and your kids may, you know, gravitate to your wife because obviously you don't give a shit about being a parent. But I don't want to hear, oh, you're babysitting your kids. No, you share an equal responsibility in raising those kids with your significant other. And I fucking hate that so much.
Dude, that would drive me nuts. And maybe that's an old adage from a different generation. Maybe dads back in the, you know, back way back when would say that when they weren't as involved as, you know, dads are these days with.
Not even way back when, like 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
I would have gone back further than that. But I mean, yeah, you look at the stats on it. I mean, dads are far more involved with the day-to-day caring of their children, changing diapers and all that. I mean, I think I've seen some weird statistics that like back in like the 50s, like 2% of dads had changed a diaper.
No way. That's crazy.
It was some wildly low number. Whereas now it is like 3/4. And I even 3/4 seems low to me considering like how I am with my kids. Like I changed my kid's first diaper in the hospital, like because my wife couldn't do it. It's just, you're not babysitting your kids. You have an equal responsibility to raise those children as much as the wife.
It's so funny. Like you go into your first child, the whole experience of being a parent, and you're like, you always think about it. You're like, oh my God, I don't want to change diapers. That seems so gross. But then you're like, you start doing it. You're like, it doesn't fucking faze you. You're just like, just wiping the shit out of this kid and just throwing a diaper on. It takes you like 10 seconds by the time you're really good at it. It
phases me still.
Does it really? It didn't faze me at all. No, I got used to it.
I mean, I'm used to it, but like every poopy diaper, dude, I'm gagging. Like I cough and like smell drives me nuts.
The worst part was like when it was a blowout.
That's
the worst.
That's a tag team effort in my house if we're both
home. You've got like the whole onesie filled up the back on this baby. It's like, how have we not come up to like a diaper technology where this doesn't happen anymore? Like, for the love of God, I don't want to deal with this. Arya, when she was little, she was lying down on the couch. And I was right in front of the couch so she wouldn't fall. I know it's not a good thing to leave like a below 1-year-old on the couch, especially with like hardwood floors, which we had. But she must have had the flu or something. And I looked up there. I got a whiff of something. I'm like, oh, she must have filled her diaper. And I look up there and it's flowed out of her diaper all over the couch. So there's just liquid shit on my couch. So now she's 10. And every time she pisses me off, I'm like, yeah. And you shit on my couch. Like you're a couch shitter.
Dude, the worst for me though is like when you smell it and like you don't know that like you can't see it visually yet. It hasn't seeped all the way through and you go to pick the kid up and you just get a nice handful of it. I've done that like 3 times with the twins and I'm just like, I was like, honey, we got a situation here. Let's go.
Yeah, we got a number 2 situation here. But yeah, this week on top of being solely responsible for my 2 girls, which once again I don't complain about, I'm happy to do it, Bjorn, my Great Dane, decided that while I have my glasses on my nightstand, it was a good time to grab them and chew on them. So I'm already basically deaf as it is because I was an idiot when I was young and I listened to music far too loud than what I should. Everybody's like, oh, you probably shouldn't listen to music that loud. I'm like Rage Against the Machine. Fuck you. I don't do what you tell me. And I listen to it way too fucking loud. And now I can barely hear. And so I am effectively like out here just raw dogging life because I can't see. I can't hear. I'm at the mercy of Zenni Optical to get me a pair of glasses in the next 2 days. So I'm basically like an NHL ref right now. I'm like just fucking trying to just find my way around.
Oh man, if I was your daughters, I'd be having a good time with you messing around with you right now.
Unbelievable. And then on top of things yesterday before work. So this is turning into a gripe session. I apologize. Know. All listeners, everybody's like, I want to hear Bruins talk, but we're just hearing Ace bitch about his life.
And I needed to vent.
Bitch about his life. But I had my closing shift yesterday at the brewery. I was working from 4 to close at 9. In my infinite wisdom, I decided it was a good time to go and get my tattoo done. And so I sat down in the chair for 5 hours working on my shin and my calf on my right leg in a job where I have to stand up for like 5 hours.
You not thinking clearly yesterday or something?
Oh my God, dude. By the end of my shift, I was like the grouchiest motherfucker known to man. Like these guys are all tanked, having a good time, listening to Irish music, doing like jigs and shit in the brewery. And they look at me and I just look like somebody kicked my puppy or something.
And you think we're grumpy now? You should have seen him yesterday.
Holy smokes. Like, my leg doesn't hurt today, thankfully. But yesterday, I was ready to, like, smack somebody.
What was up with that tweet? What tweet? About the guy next to you at the tattoo?
Oh, my God, you gotta tell that Thank story. You for bringing that up.
You gotta tell that story. God.
So I'm sitting down there, getting my leg tattooed. I'm on my chest because she's tattooing my calf, right? And this guy comes in. And he's wearing Crocs, which no disrespect against Crocs. Big Crocs guy here. I like Crocs. They're comfortable. They're, you know, multi-use and everything. But he's wearing Crocs with sweatpants and a sweatshirt. No shirt underneath. So I was like, this guy is like Rochester's finest. It's great. So he sits down and I hear him talking to the tattoo artist. He's like, oh, you know, I'm here to get my chest tattoo covered up. So he takes off his sweatshirt and he's got a little tiny pectoral tattoo and he sits down and he's got the perfect artist for it. The artist in there that he's working with is the fastest tattooing guy that I've ever seen in my life. Like, he starts working with his tattoo machine on somebody and that thing is done in like 30 minutes to an hour. And it's like, wow, in good detail and everything. I'm fucking amazed because I usually sit down for like multiple hours for a not too super complex session. And I'm okay with that because I work with a lot of newer artists that are trying to build a portfolio. But this guy, he starts working on him and he's sitting there and he's like, I'm like, and I look over, I'm like, what the fuck is going on over there? Like, tattoos hurt. If you haven't had a tattoo yet, tattoos hurt. And there's different areas that hurt more. The meaty part, your pectoral on the chest. I don't have a tattoo there, but I've heard from many people that do. It's not comfortable, but it's not that bad. And this guy's over there moaning. Like, at first I was like, is he like really enjoying this?
Yeah.
Like, is he one of those guys? Like, what's going on over there? And I start hearing him like hyperventilate. Like he's doing like the, like giving birth breathing. Like, is it? I'm like, oh my God, dude. Like, are you sure? Like, it didn't even make sense to me that this guy like had a tattoo there before. Like, how did the artist go there before go ahead and work through the time that it took to put that on there? Because that was probably like a hour and a half session before.
He probably was laughing at him while he was making those noises.
Oh my God, dude. And the artist is like, are you struggling here? Like, do we need to stop? He's like, I just gotta collect myself. I think I'm just hyping myself up. I can't do it. I'm really struggling here. And I just look at my artist and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I have a lot of tattoos. Like, I have a full sleeve, big leg piece. I'm working on my leg sleeve right now. I've got a bunch of tattoos on my right arm. I had never seen this before. I had never in my life seen this before. And eventually he's like, I have to tap out. I can't. This was 15 minutes. 15 minutes into this thing. And this guy's like, I got to tap out. And he talks. He's like, yeah, and I'll pay for the whole tattoo. And the artist is like, yeah, that wasn't a fucking option. You're going to pay for the whole tattoo. Like, I blocked my time off for you. You're still paying.
I mean, The guy clearly has experience with tattoos. He's got one on him, but like 5 minutes in, I'd tap out too. I hate needles. Anything to do with needles?
See, I don't, it's not.
It's still not a needle thing poking for me. Anything poking me would be.
You don't even feel like it's poking. And I understand where you're coming from because I thought that too. I hate needles. I hate shots. I hate all that stuff. I hate getting my blood drawn. It's not like that. It's not like a needle because it's just a buzz noise and they touch you. You don't even see a needle. There's no half of that issue is that you visually see a needle penetrate your skin, right?
The thought of it. Like I start like I'm a big baby when it comes to it. Like I don't want to say like I'll start hyperventilating, but like I'll get like super nervous before I just get a little poke. Like I'm a big baby, a huge baby when it comes to the needles.
Not even a poke. It's just like somebody scratching you for the most part. But
I don't know. I don't think I can.
You're right. You don't know. You
I don't think I can do it.
You know, go get a small one. Your first one, like yeah. On like the meat of your arm. And then you'll have like a rudimentary understanding of what it is. I had them working on my shin and like right on the shin bone.
Oh.
Not super great. It hurt, but wasn't awful either. Like I was way over hyping it. I thought it was going to be exponentially worse than what it was. I got through it. Like I said, I sat down for 5 hours on Saturday. I sat down at 10 a.m. and I got out of there at like 2 p.m., 2:30, 3 o'clock. Consistent. Like luckily I got up because I had a large Dunkin' iced coffee. I got up to go piss and grab like another water and a granola bar because you got to make sure you're hydrated. You got to make sure that you have food because your body is like somebody's actively fucking me up and you need to have like hydration and like sustenance in order to go through that.
Right.
But yeah, that was a weird experience, man. Like super super odd. Let's talk some Bruins hockey.
Let's do it.
What the fuck was that St. Louis Blues game?
A no-show. I mean, for me, it's a no-show. You know what I mean? I know they came out, they were shooting the puck like crazy. They just weren't finishing in this one. No. And they can't play defense or keep the puck out of their own net either. And to me, we'll get into, you know, the later in the week stuff here, but like for me, like that's like the thing that kind of scares me the most is the amount of goals that this team is giving up. And to be honest with you, it's Swayman when he's in there. He has not been great in the last that scares me.
It scares me a lot, dude, especially because he's basically been unofficially told, you are the heir apparent. You won the battle between you and Linus Ullmark. We are moving on from Linus. We tried to move on from Linus. And now he's playing not so great. And I'm not saying it's exclusively his fault.
It's not.
Because the defense hasn't been great. And not just the defensemen. The system defense.
Mm-hmm.
The forwards have been losing their guys in transition. Bad pinches across the board by the D-men. It's just system stuff. It's the finer details that this team is usually associated with having that seem to have fallen by the wayside. And, you know, like Burr said, against that Blues team, the Bruins probably had the better chances, but they weren't able to solve Hofer. And the Blues went down the other side of the ice and a fluke shot scored. Just like the fucking 2019 final. Pat Maroon talked about it. They asked Pat Maroon, hey, welcome to Boston. What was your take of joining this team after beating them in the playoffs twice, especially against the, you know, with the Blues team? And he's like, oh, you know, this is always a really good club to play against, you know, all the same fucking PR train shit when you come to a new team. But he's like, you know, they had us on the ropes in 2019. Game 7, they had like 15 shots to our one. And we've talked about this, Burge and I have. Like the Bruins had them. They just didn't solve Binnington. They could not get that goal. And then they went down the other way and they scored a fucking goal. And that just felt like it was like that 2019 game 7 reciprocated all over again. It, obviously, the stakes aren't as high, but the Blues would come down. They'd have a somewhat decent scoring chance. The puck would go into the net. The Bruins would go down the other side of the ice, have a somewhat decent scoring chance. Hofer would make a save. And that just was the story of that game.
Absolutely. And, you know, could this be this team's kryptonite running into a hot goalie? Usually in the playoffs, that's what will end up getting you through and getting you over the top to a championship. And that's something that is definitely something to be concerned about as Bruins fans. Now, my bigger concern, and it's going to kind of play into how these next two games went for the Bruins, you know, the win against the Habs, I thought Linus Ullmark was good and very good in this game. I know he didn't face that much shots, you know, at the end of the day, but he was very good. He stopped what he needed to stop. The Bruins were able to grind out the win in Montreal. Fast forward, I don't want to get too far ahead. I don't know if you got any thoughts on this one, but real quick to get really into it. The Flyers game, great third period to go up the 3 goals early in the third. Blow it, almost blow it at the end. A softy given up, in my opinion, by Swayman on Delorier's goal on the wraparound. It seemed like there was laziness from the goaltender and the defenseman on that play. What are we going to do with these goalies? Because, like, this would be a classic scenario that concerns me about the playoffs if you're going to rotate your goalies.
Well, I mean, and Monty's already come out and said they're doing that this postseason.
I understand that, and that's a major concern for me because you're going to have a performance like Linus Ullmark coming out here making the save, and then you're going to have Jeremy Swayman go in there and give up 5 goals the next game, 2 games removed from when he gave up 5 goals in a loss. So I'm going to reiterate more of how I feel about this whole thing, but I almost feel like having these two elite goalies in the playoffs is almost as good as having no goalies. And that may be an extreme take, an extreme look at it. But like, if you're going to play a guy who was subpar after the guy who plays really well and gets a win, what are we doing? Like, you risk this happening in the playoffs. And that's a major concern for me that they're not going to, if all of a sudden one of these goalies decides to put together a couple of really good games, you're going to sit them down. Like, what are we doing?
I don't want to beat a dead horse here. Like, we've done this before.
Yeah, I don't want to either, but
I honestly think that they need to do the alternative thing because we tried giving the guy the reins last year. You anointed the pending Vezina Trophy winner, the number one goalie, and you rode him when you shouldn't have rode him because they decided to give the guy the one role, right? The wheels fell off. They panicked. They went to Jeremy Swayman. Jeremy too Swayman late. Wasn't ready for it. Yeah, too late. I agree. It was too late because they need to keep the tandem going. So until you move on from Linus Ullmark, keep the tandem going. When Linus Ullmark is gone, Swayman's your 1A. But not even 1A. He's your 1. Bussy or whoever, DiPietro comes up, he's your backup. You can't do a 1A, 1B until the 1B proves that they're capable of being a 1B.
The way I wanted to see them do this down the stretch, and I don't know if I'm repeating myself for the listeners out there, but like Linus Ullmark wins a game 2-1, grinded out type game. Yeah, maybe he wasn't all that tested, but he did what he needed to do to win that game. Give him the start against Philadelphia. If he plays worse, maybe they still squeak out a win. But you judge it on his play in that game and the team's play in that game. Maybe they get the win, but then you make the switch. You don't need to necessarily pick one and ride him all the way at this point. Like, I think that we've talked about it, but I think we've seen out of these two guys that they're not capable of taking that. They're not capable of doing it. They're not ready to do it because they haven't been tested to do it throughout the entire season. But I think you need to give back to back at least once and see what happens with it. See what happens with it. And again, I'm not saying 6 games and then make the change. I'm saying 2, maybe 3, make the change if you have to, if that makes sense. And maybe 3 is your max. And you know what? He played stellar 3 games. You won 3 games, sit him down, give him a break. You know what I mean? Rotate them that way. Not the alternate every other game kind of thing. And that's
especially. Or maybe you go, you give one guy the 2 games at home.
Sure.
You give the other guy the 2 games on the road.
Absolutely.
And you just do that. Home, away. Home, away. You're the home goalie. You're the away goalie. Just, you got to keep this consistent rotation for these two guys because that's what's worked.
I can get on board with something like that.
As soon as we deviate from that, we're putting ourselves into uncharted territory, and then the coaches start to panic because they haven't had to deviate from this, and then they do stupid things. So with the current situation the way it is, I think that they need to do that. What's your take on the early returns on Andrew Peak?
Better than I expected, for sure. You know, when we got on here last week talking about him, I was a little very apprehensive about it. But seeing what he's done in the, what is it, two games he's played so far?
Yeah.
Looked really good. Fit, looks like he's a fit in there.
Yeah.
Much rather see him in there than somebody like Kevin Shattenkirk. Obviously, definitely want to see him in there. You know, get well soon, Derek Forbert. But I'm glad that he's in there, not you.
Yep.
Keep seeing what happens. I mean, the kid can keep doing this down the stretch here. Dude, he's going to earn himself a spot in here for a while.
Kid's eating pucks, making good plays out of the zone. He's got good legs. He can tell he's only 25, mm-hmm. which is really important. You know, you didn't want them bringing in a 31-year-old with term or anything. So really excited about what I've seen from him so far. And I think a lot of the people that were saying, you know, keep an eye on that trade, because Andrew Peak found himself in a little bit of a pickle there with the GM change and the coaching changes and everything that's going on over there in Columbus. So early dividends are good. That was a beautiful pass across the crease to John Beecher. Like, Beecher fucking almost fucked it up when he hit the post, and luckily he was able to bury that. But yeah, I really like what he does. It seems like a warrior out there. I still think it's funny that he was the guy that Marchand fucking destroyed on the boards a few years back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like the deal so far. I'm optimistic. I feel like he's a guy that could play, you know, a good two-way brand hockey, but still be really relied upon on the defensive side of things, especially like on the PK, which is really good. He kind of reminds me of like a bigger Ryan Lindgren a bit from the New York Rangers.
Mm-hmm. Former draft pick of the Bruins.
Yeah. And the Rick Nash trade, he went mm-hmm. to New York. But a little less like, you know, brittle boned. Now Ryan Lindgren acts like he dies at least once every game, I feel like. But yeah, speaking of trade deadline acquisitions for the Boston Bruins, I sent you a message about Ty Anderson. He sent out a tweet. Apparently the Boston Bruins are not agreeing with the Minnesota Wild's assessment health-wise of the big rig Pat Maroon. So prior to the trade, it was stated by, I believe Michael Russo is his name. He's the beat writer for the Minnesota Wild. He was saying that, you know, Pat Maroon is obviously traded to Boston, but he had recently began skating. And that was confirmed by Pat Maroon when he came to Boston. He was saying that he, you know, he had started skating. Apparently Boston's medical team had decided that, you know, they have a difference of opinion that he's not necessarily ready to be skating. And he's the plug has kind of been pulled on that to let his, you know, recently, you know, he recently had surgery on his back to let that recover a bit more before he hits the ice.
I think it might be a little bit of the gamemanship with the long-term IR. I mean, that's a pessimistic view of looking at it. I'm only joking when I say that, but I mean, a 35-year-old guy coming off back surgery, I'd want my team doctors to be as cautious with that as possible, especially when you're looking at trying to make a deep playoff run here. And to me, it doesn't bother me from the Bruins standpoint either. They don't really need him right now. The Bruins are in position, you know, primed for a solid playoff spot, whether it's the two seed or the one seed in their division, and holding him out longer, there's no harm in that from the Bruins' perspective. And I actually am very happy that they're being cautious about it, because the last thing you want to do is put the guy out there too early, have him tweak something, and then he's no longer any good to you for your playoff run. So,
yeah, I agree. And honestly, the Boston Bruins staff have proven time and time again, medically, that they know what the hell they're doing. You know, we saw it with the McAvoy and the Marchand surgeries last year, mm-hmm. where all the people were saying, oh, you know, the prognostication is that they'll be back in like January or whatever. Yeah. And then they showed up like 2 months before the initial expectation, and they performed well. It wasn't like they were slow or anything. So, you know, I'm not going to be like, I'm not obviously a medical professional, nor will I ever pretend to be one. And I do think that the Bruins probably have that department a little more organized than maybe the Minnesota Wild, but I don't know how Minnesota runs things. It's just, you know, leap of faith there on that statement. But in the Boston Bruins medical staff, I think Scotty Waugh runs that, W-A-U-G-H. If I pronounce his name right, he's not French, I don't think, but I'm pretty sure they've got it together. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what maybe the updated timeline is on Pat Maroon, if the Bruins ever share any more details on that, as long as he's ready for the postseason.
I was going to say, my guess is it'll be day one of the postseason is when you're going to first see him in a game action. Maybe you'll see him in a tune up for like the last game of the regular season or before that, when they're playing a lot of guys and he's going to get, you know, minimum minutes just to get the legs back. You know what I mean? So that'd be the only reason why there's any purpose to put him in a game before that, especially the style of hockey that he plays.
I agree. And I mean, Don Sweeney, we said this last week, but like Don Sweeney was like, we all know when Pat Maroon's, you know, when he's going to play his best hockey. So
exactly.
What's your take on the end of that Flyers game? Like
I don't want to say they got lucky because they scored 6 goals in this game, but dude, it just makes me so uneasy about this team closing out leads late in games. And this was a little bit to the extreme because you're talking about a 3-goal lead that they got early in the third period that they almost squandered. Yeah. And it's just not something that we expected this team to be like this year. We expected a sound defensive and a sound goaltending from this team. And we didn't expect them to score 6 goals a game, for crying out loud. So they're outdoing our expectations on that front, but they're kind of letting us down a little bit in the back end. Happy that Heinen was able to pot that goal late to give them that extra cushion, because it ended up being the game winner at the end. But man, it's just, I'm really, really concerned about the late third period meltdowns that this team has. And I'm really hoping that they can correct it in this last couple of weeks of the season. I don't know if they're going to, because this is, again, we have a large sample size of this type of play late in games. I'm just hoping it doesn't turn around and bite them come, you know, time it matters. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. It's like just more of the same. This team, whether it's 1-goal leads, 2-goal leads, 3-goal leads, as soon as that goalie gets pulled, this team cannot make the clears. They can't hit the net. Like, who was it? I think somebody had a chance to bury it in the empty net, and he like hit the outside of the post or like the apron of the goal. Was it Heinen? I think
it might have been
initially. Yeah,
it might have been.
I'm not going to give him a hard time after he sniped that shot to like put them up too. But I'm like, for the love of God, guys, like, clear the fucking puck. And when you have a chance to score in the empty net, score. Like, another example of that is Marchand tearing up the left wing. He is waiting like 4 seconds to shoot it because he's trying to get the optimal shot, and he gets the puck taken right off his stick from behind. And Jack Edwards was talking about it. He's like, that's right in front of the Bruins bench. I really hope the Bruins were like letting him know he was right there. But like, you expect the captain of the team to make the right play there. If you don't think you can score that, don't hold it onto the blue line and
get
let
it
them
in
go
deep.
Up and exactly.
Just get it out.
Dump that puck deep.
I don't even care if you take an icing in that situation. Just get rid of it. Yep. Get it out. Just kill clock. That's all you're doing. Yep. Icing sucks because you can't change and you're tired, but like, at least you get a little bit of a breather and you can reset yourself. Yep. So
absolutely.
It's deeply concerning, especially the way momentum works in the playoffs. When you think about it, if you blow a late third period lead, I mean, we saw it last year, Game 7 against Florida. You blow that late, last minute and a half that Florida tied that game in Game 7, and then they win in overtime. Like, that momentum carries forward so much more in the playoffs than it does in the regular season. Yep. And I'd rather have them squander a lead in the first period or the second period and lose a game than to lose it the way that they have lost some of these games or blown some of these leads, because at that point, you're like, all right, we gave it, you know, we had our chances at the end, but like, you have really no excuse at the end of games to blow leads like that.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, we have a fun week of Bruins hockey coming up here. We're going to have a fun guest on for you today. So we're actually going to have Robert Chalmers come on. He's going to be talking about Bruins prospects with us, break down some of the recent things that he's seeing. You can follow him on Twitter at Ivan. That's Ivan. And yeah, once again, Robert Chalmers, and he is from Cohen's Hockey Media. So we're going to send you over to that interview right now.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the National Hockey League, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. You could get the Boston Bruins against the St. Louis Blues at plus 110. Or alternatively, you could get the Blues at minus 130. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet just $5 in the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to Pad Stack fans. And welcome back to the Two Pad Stack Hattrick with Patrick. I am Patrick. Let's go. As always, gamble responsibly and at your own risk. All these lines are courtesy of DraftKings Sportsbook. Shout out DraftKings. Always, we went 3-0 last week. Yes, to bring our record to 14-19 on the season. These picks are for Tuesday, March 19th. Here we go. First, I am going to take the Rangers, the New York Rangers, hosting the Winnipeg Jets at Madison Square Garden. I'm taking Rangers -1.5. That is Rangers to win by 2 or more goals. A little risky, but sometimes you have to risk it for the biscuit. That's +205. Next, I am going the Boston Bruins money line, but three-way. So in regulation, Boston Bruins to win over the Ottawa Senators at TD Garden. And lastly, I am taking the Carolina Hurricanes at New York Islanders over 6 goals scored at -105. The Hurricanes are buzzing with their new acquisitions, and the Islanders are among the top teams when it comes to their games going over. So that is Rangers -1.5, Bruins 60-minute line, and Carolina at the New York Islanders over 6 goals scored. Thank you for listening to Two Pat Stack, and especially the Two Pat Stack Hattrick with Patrick. I am Patrick. Let's make some money.
All right, and we are here with Rob Chalmers. How's it going, Rob?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. Of course. Really glad to have you here. Really love following your insights on social media for a while now. So for those of you that don't know, Rob is, very keen to share prospect insights from not just the Bruins, but across the NHL. Rob, where can they find your content again?
So on Twitter, you can go to Ivan, and then you can look at my blog. I haven't wrote a bit on there, but you can go to CohensHockey.org. So we write a bit on there, prospect rankings here and there. We're going to update it soon, nice. I think, for the Bruins. So
great. Now you got to tell me the story. Ivan.
Yeah, I don't know how that started. I was a big fanboy for that player in the World Juniors a few years ago. And I was like, no, I'm just going to change it to that. It's kind of funny. And now he's with the Avalanche organization. So I follow him a bit. Played in the Quebec League with Pete Breton. the Cape Breton Eagles in Nova Scotia. So he lit it up there, and now he's starting on an AHL deal, and now he's on an NHL deal with Colorado. It's kind of cool.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, and just one thing to keep in mind, if you are looking up to follow him, that last Ivan, the last I is actually an L.
Yeah.
Threw a curveball at me. So just keep that in mind. So yeah, really excited to have you here. We're going to talk about some Bees prospects in the system, all that good stuff here. And you know what we're going to do first and foremost is kind of dive in on the NCAA level. So Rob, any Bruins prospects jumping out at you right now that are really contributing well to their clubs or seem to be on a strong development path for the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, definitely Oscar Jelvik is number one right now, I'd say. We definitely have a good amount. Obviously, we have Jelvik, Lashmelis, Gasso is also on Boston College. Jelvik and Gasso play on Boston College with Kuntar last season, but he's now in Providence. I like Jelvik a lot. He's got a lot of skill. Really, he's a pass-first player, but I remember at development camp, he dented a board in a shot. I was like, this kid's got to shoot more. He only had 4 goals last year. I think he's got double digits now, like almost 15, I think. Mm-hmm. He really can shoot the puck. He has great vision. Definitely needs to work on defense a little bit, but I think they do. I don't know if they use him on the penalty kill or not. I think that's Gasso that they use. Kind of mix him up here, but sure. When it comes to Jelvik, he's great high IQ. They drafted him out of, I believe it was it Frölunda's? No, it was one of the Swedish junior leagues.
Djurgården.
Yeah, it's hard to mix them up. There's so many Swedish teams.
There are.
But he played in the junior 20 league. Obviously, I think he played like a few SHL games, so he was suspended for like 2 or 3 games by the NCAA, but he didn't care. Kept on rolling after last season. Had a bunch of assists, but they really love him on the power play. He's a great power play distributor for pre-set up shots is what they call in analytics. They're crazy, but he really sets up shots well. Setting up, I believe he's on power play 2 for Boston College. I believe power play 1 obviously is with Cutter Gauthier, Ryan Leonard, Will Smith, all those guys. I believe Gasso sometimes goes on power play 1. They switch it around at BC, but Oscar Jelvik, great shot, great hockey IQ. Definitely has a little ways to go. We'll definitely need to play at Providence for a little bit whenever he signs. I don't think it'll be after this season. He'll probably play another year at BC.
Yeah.
I really like what the Bruins got in him. I had a lot of confidence in him going into the second year at Boston College.
I'm just taking a look at his stats, and he took a giant leap forward on production, obviously, as he went into his 21st, being 21 years old, he got a little bit more of responsibility, filled in his size. He's not a big guy, 5'11", looks like.
Not big at all.
But he's gone from, in his freshman year with BC, putting up 17 points.
I think it was 17, yep.
Yeah, and now he's already up to, I guess he's at 35.
Point per game, right?
This season, yeah, point per game, which is really great to see. So, yeah, that's great to hear. And you know, obviously, I'm assuming that PJ Axelsson probably had a big role in bringing him in, via his role as the Swedish scout for the Boston Bruins. But
yeah, I think since they've brought him in, it started with Laisel. Obviously, he went a different route. He didn't go college hockey. He went WHL because they wanted a quicker path for him. But when it comes to him and his picks, they've done. We did Laisel. We've done, we just talked about Jelvik, Lashmelis, Kostadinsky, and Nassen. All our players in that J20 system, not except Laisel and Kostadinsky, are not committed to college, obviously. Laisel, WHL, and AHL. Yep. And then Kostadinsky, I believe, is going to try and get a role in for Frölunda next year in the SHL. If not, he'll go to the Elitserien. But Nassen's committed to Miami University in Ohio. But it's a really interesting pipeline the Bruins are trying to take ahead of here with the Swedish Junior League. And it's working with Jelvik, Lashmelis, we'll get to. He's definitely taking it a bit slower. He's at 0.5 per game right now with UMass. But I've liked what I've seen from him. He's definitely taking in – Greg Carvell with UMass is definitely taking it a bit slower with him. And I think that's the right way to go because he's been on a bigger ice surface. Obviously, in the NCAA, the ice surfaces are different in each rink.
Right.
So he's been hanging in there. I think he's been starting on the third line, and I think I haven't really been looking at the line sheet for UMass, but he's been producing just fine. At 0.5 a game, he'll get there. I have confidence in him for next year. As I said with Jelvik, I think he's just getting in there. NCAA is obviously like another development league for players, and you learn as you go. So he's a center. That's a good shot. Great IQ. As you saw him in the world. If you've seen him in the World Juniors, you know what type of player he is. He always produces for Latvia. So cool to see him kind of go. And he obviously wasn't a Swedish player. He's a Latvian player playing in the Swedish league, which is kind of cool. But another player to keep an eye on for next year for UMass as well.
Yeah, it always seems like Lock Mellis was the guy for Latvia. He was out there for every single important shift and probably was the face of their team. I think he wore the C in the World Juniors as well.
Wore the C this past year for Latvia, yes.
Excellent. Well, you love to see that. You always want somebody that has that character of being a leader in the room. And, you know, with the culture change that's going on, Marshan's only going to be here for X amount of time. Obviously, that mantle of responsibility will go to, you know, David Pasternak and Charlie McAvoy and Brandon Carlo and such. But, you know, that's the type of character that the Bruins want in their room. So that's really good to see and exciting. Staying on the NCAA, reverting back to that topic, I'm interested in your thoughts about over in Providence College, not the Bruins, but the goaltender Philip Svedbäck. You know, the Bruins crease pipeline is immense. And there was also rumors of the Boston Bruins being interested in another goaltending prospect from the NCAA that came out earlier this week.
Yeah, so Svedbäck, I actually forgot that I mentioned a player from the Swedish pipeline. He was another one they drafted out of there from Axelsson. He was drafted out of there, but he went right to the USHL, developed with Dubuque, I believe it was. And now he's at Providence, so college. So it's possible he turns pro after this year. I'm not 100% on that. Goalies sometimes have a different path. Sometimes they like to go longer. Sometimes they don't really mind going quick because the AHL, ECHL is not bad for goalies. Believe it or not, the East Coast League is not a bad goalie development league. You saw it with Brandon Bussey. But with Svedbäck, I really like him. I think Providence College, their defense is not terrible. But he can make some timely saves here and there. Haven't watched a ton of him this year because there's so many college teams to follow. Yeah. But when I did get an eye on him, he's definitely a player to watch when it comes to players turning pro. Him and obviously another Bruins prospect in Providence, Riley Duran.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be shocked if he turns pro in the coming days. I've been checking my phone a lot recently to see if any of these players are turning pro like any second now because their college seasons are ending. So. But I like Svedbäck a lot, makes some timely saves, very athletic, bigger guy, I think.
I just saw him recently against BU, and he was pretty massive in that crease.
Yeah,
and
pretty big.
He plays a really good positional style.
Yeah,
he's not very super athletic. He just relies on his positioning to be sound. He kind of reminds me a little bit of like Tuukka Rask in that regard.
Yeah,
Tuukka Rask was super athletic, but he didn't ever really have to leverage it because he was always positioned so well. And, you know, I guess Svedbäck would be a little bit more from the Swedish school of goaltending, maybe a little bit more like a modern-day Henrik Lundqvist. Not comparing them, for the record, but style-wise. I saw a lot of Hank in Svedbäck when I saw him play. So I do think that, you know, goaltending, like you had mentioned, it's a position that is really well documented that sometimes it takes longer to marinate. I mean, you saw Tim Thomas took a long time before he was able to come over here and play at an elite level in the NHL. I mean, he won the cup when he was 37. So, and with the current Bruins situation, they're in a fortunate place where they don't need to rush any of these goaltenders. And
no, not at all.
So, I mean, you even have Reed Dick that's over there in the WHL, current. I believe.
Yep.
So, Bruins have a lot of goaltending irons in the fire. So, wanted to kind of get your thoughts on, was there any other NCAA prospects that you think we should kind of touch on here before we move
on? Yeah, we'll touch on one more. Andre Gasso, I mentioned him earlier. I didn't really talk about him, but he is an interesting one. Seventh round pick out of the National Development Program that went to Fargo, the USHL. Then he's in his second year at BC. Very interesting product. Bigger guy, bigger for how he plays, I'd say. But he also, his skating's not amazing, but he produces. He does have a good shot. Not too bad of a hockey IQ. He's on the power play here and there, on the penalty kill also. But you don't really know what he is. He gets knocked off the puck a little bit here and there. He gets hit a lot. Like, you'll see open ice hits with him. He's just looking down at the puck. And then he gets knocked up. But I still really like him because he shoots well. He has a great shot. He produces. He's produced in 2 years at BC so far. But he's a seventh rounder, and he's had a long development path through the USHL. He'll probably do another year at BC when it comes to him. He's just a very interesting product to me. I've always been very curious with him. He had half a point a game in junior, and then he was near a point per game in NCAA, which was interesting. And that was last season before all the talent came into BC this season.
Yeah, I mean, you know what they say. They don't ask how, they ask how many. So,
yep.
You know, as long as you're producing, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. So we're still on NCAA here. Touched on a few of these Bruins prospects that came to mind for me, came to mind for you. You had mentioned that you're monitoring your phone for players that are electing to go pro. Anybody in particular that jumps out at you as maybe a target for the Boston Bruins?
So Colin Graf, obviously, Quinnipiac is a big one. I can confirm Don Sweeney has scouted him quite a bit. I had actually a Northeastern game. We were talked to him there. He was asking for lines and everything. He's scouting all the Quinnipiac guys. The Bruins have had a few guys at Quinnipiac games recently. So Graf is definitely one. They also keep an eye on, they call it like loophole guys, like whoever, like they might go to August 15th and go to free agency, such as like, you know, maybe a Lipkin or someone on Quinnipiac. There's also, they signed, as you saw, Drew Bavaro out of Notre Dame. I thought that was a good depth signing. You know, maybe he'll become something one day. You never know. But he's looked pretty good in Providence defensively. I work in Northeastern, so obviously I'm a big fan of the guys we have. Justin Richkovian is a great faceoff guy, good defensive forward who can produce as well. I think he's entering his senior year, I believe, at Northeastern, and I really liked what I've seen from him. He's a really, really good player. When it comes to other ones, obviously, there's so many. Obviously, there's goaltenders. Victor Osman at Maine, I really like. Obviously, another Hockey East guy. He's been really fun. He can really he could have went pro last year, and then he decided, you know what, I'm gonna stay at Maine for another year. And obviously, yeah. The Bruins have pretty history at goalies at Maine with Swayman, so. They know what to do there. And then obviously one other one in Northeastern I've kept an eye on, Jack Williams. He been really, really solid for us. He kind of exploded this year in production. So there's quite a few out there. There's a lot. But whenever one comes and signs, if that happens, because the prospect pool is so, you know, on the down low compared to a lot of others because we've traded so many draft picks.
Yeah.
It's hard to produce prospects that way. It's hard to produce prospects from your picks when you don't have any. So
that's usually how it works. Yeah.
NCAA is going to be key here.
Boston's always been a big player in that marketplace. It's always been something they've been keeping their eyes on. And it helps when you have so many great D1 teams right in your backyard. But I'm interested in getting your thoughts on maybe some of the non-NCAA prospects that are in the system. We had mentioned maybe before talking a little bit about Chris Pelosi, Beckett Hendrickson. What are your takes on those guys?
Yeah, so Pelosi, I'll tell you what, when they drafted him, I was like, I haven't heard of this guy. Because he was playing mostly in the NAHL, they call it, the NAHL. We call it the NAHL, which is like a tier two junior league. And I don't know if they scouted him a ton at Gainesville, but he got called up to Sioux Falls, where he plays now. And he was just a net front menace. And the Bruins really like that because they don't have a guy in their system that can, like, really play a net front, have a shot on the elbow, really shoot the puck, have a great hockey IQ. Last night, he had a great play. He was at center ice, grabbed the puck out of midair, hand pass, put it down, immediately skate back toward the offensive zone, center it to his teammate Weebush, I believe his name is, and then he just sniped it home. So his hockey IQ to me is what really stands out. I think he plays PK and power play, which is really significant, even though he's in the USHL. So it is a junior league, but he's at over a point per game right now, I believe, or just at it. I've really liked what I've seen from him. And then Beckett Hendrickson, defensive forward. I think he plays mostly wing. A lot of people confuse him and think he's a center, but I believe he plays more on the wing right now. Who knows? They could try and develop him at center at the University of Minnesota. Not sure on that part, but he's supposed to go there next season. Pelosi is supposed to go to Quinnipiac next season. When it comes to Hendrickson, he got traded to Dubuque in the USHL as of recent. So that him and Pelosi were line mates the whole year until the USHL trade deadline happened. And then obviously he's with Dubuque, who's a really good USHL team right now. And he's been producing with them as well. So he's got a great shot, in my opinion. He has this little toe drag move here and there. He makes that I like. But he's a good skater, not terrible. Mm-hmm. He's a bit bigger too, as a player. So we'll see what happens there. I'm excited to see him at Minnesota in the Big Ten. Very tough conference for him to play in, but yeah. it'll be fun to watch.
Well, it's only a matter of time till development camp comes around again too. So we're going to see a lot of these guys back at Warrior Ice Arena. Do you try to get up to development camp to check out?
I usually try and not miss any of those days at development camp because they're so fun. One other prospect, non NCAA like junior guy, Jackson Edward. He's been fun. He's a very violent defender, really defends well. But he racks up a lot of penalty minutes. He's signed. He'll play in either Providence or Maine next year. Not sure what will happen. Maybe, who knows? Maybe we'll play in the NHL. Who knows? I doubt that. But he's been really, really, really good defense. He's a really good defender. And he's been really interesting to watch. I call him just a fun guy to watch because he just defends well. His offense is going to need work, but that's what junior's for, just to work on your offense.
I did see him make it seems like those pieces are starting to click for him. I did see a nice highlight of him successfully toe dragging, going, backhand to forehand, opening up space, and then finding a beautiful cross crease pass for a goal. So I do think that the potential is there for Jackson Edward, but I also think that a guy like him, if he can crack the NHL roster, that's a guy that's going to sell some tickets. Like, that's some entertainment value right there.
Yeah,
he plays.
He likes to fight. He has a lot of penalty minutes. He's going to try and get to over 100 for the second year in a row, I believe, with London. So he's going to, he has a lot of suspensions this year. So he's going to have to, he'll be fun. I'm excited to see what he can bring.
Probably needs to rein it in a bit. I saw one clip of him headbutting somebody, which is a no-no. Yeah, you can't do that. Let's talk about the Providence Bruins here. Obviously, the big names that everyone wants to talk about, Georgi Mrkulov, Fabian Lysell. These are probably the players that are closest to making an NHL impact in the system right now, at least in my opinion. You may have a different one. But I'm interested in kind of getting your temperature check on where some of these players are in Providence and maybe who some of your standouts have been.
Yeah, so number one's Mrkulov for me. He's obviously a little older. I think he's like just turned 23. So if you watch him, you just know, like, okay, this guy can play in the NHL soon. His pace is a bit different. He likes to control it with his pace, basically, and he has a really good shot. He's a bit smaller, but his shot is just, it's unreal sometimes. He has great vision as well. The power play, I remember last season when they had Vinny Lattery on the roster, he went out with an injury. He got called up, and then he got injured in practice. It was awful. And then they're like, all right, well, let's try Mrkulov on the elbow and the wing and on the power play and see what happens. And he was just absolutely rifling shots on the one-timer point. He scored like eight of them last year from on one-timer position. And he just produces now at the AHL level. He's at a point per game. He was near it last year. I mean, he had like 55 points as a rookie last year in the AHL. That's like really solid. He coming out of Ohio State, I mean, he's got an interesting story too. He didn't really want to play in the NCAA forever because he was shocked he passed all his classes as well. In the NCAA with Ohio State, he's like, all right, I'm out of here. I want to go pro. So he wanted to just keep playing. And he went to Providence on an ATO to start. And then obviously he's just been producing producing really well with Providence. Obviously defense needs work, faceoffs need work. And they want him to be a centerman. But his faceoff game is not amazing, but I think they have confidence in that it'll grow, and a lot of players' faceoff game can grow. You've seen it with many players in the NHL, and I think they believe that he can. If he has a faceoff game that can grow, there's a lot of value there. Same thing with his defense. His defense in his first year was outright terrible, I'd say. This year, he's like, you see him in his defensive awareness, back checking here and there. He's He's just, his awareness in the defensive zone is better. He's trying to retrieve pucks better. Like, he's not like run, like standing in the neutral zone waiting for a pass. Like, it's a lot, it's better. You want it to be better. And it's not going to fly in the NHL with just not playing defense in your role.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the tweets from the Providence Bruins. I admittedly, I don't watch any of their games. I just kind of am the box score guy. But I always see them saying, Georgi Mrkulov scores, Georgi Mrkulov scores. And I'm just wondering, like, what is going on? Why? Because he was arguably, maybe I'm being too harsh here and too big of a critic, but he was invisible when he was up with the Boston Bruins. And is it just the speed and the size of the players that is that much different and a little harder? Or do you think it was a little bit of intimidation of being at the show that he just wasn't playing his game? What's your kind of thought?
I thought he was not too bad in the first game, and then the rest I didn't notice him because he's not a bottom six player. They tried him on like the fourth line, the third line, and admittedly it just didn't work. They wanted a similar role that Patra did until he got injured, and well, actually he was sent to World Juniors and that's when they called Mrkulov up.
Yeah,
and they wanted to try him in like that third line center role, but you know, Patra has like a little bit of a defensive game here and he could really retrieve pucks. He could really play well along the boards. He could do all that. Mrkulov doesn't really have, you need Mrkulov to play with like other skilled players. And then you can really notice him. Cause that's what, in Providence, that's what he does. He plays with Lysell. He plays with, well, right now he's playing with Patrick Brown, but he was playing with like other good play. I mean, for AHL, tier, he was playing with like Regula, I think, but that's like top line AHL players. And if he plays top line NHL players, the question is, let's see if that happens. Maybe he'll look a lot better. And we're kind of hoping that'll happen one day. And I think they're not going to call him up again until there's like an injury or two in the top six. That's when you'll see the Mrkulovs, the Lysells possibly get a call up, not the like McLaughlins and the Brazos and Patrick Brown. Like you'll probably see them get a call up next. I think they softly want them to develop top line minutes in Providence right now. And if they get a shot in the NHL now, they want those guys to be in top minutes, because it's with Patra, what they were doing, you noticed him most nights. Like he was really playing well. He was producing like half a point a game in the NHL as a 19-year-old. That's still really good. I mean, that's development. You want that.
What really stood out to me about Patra's game when he was with the Bruins this year was the hockey awareness. He was really intelligent on the way he would position his body and protect the puck. And despite being still very much a boy growing into his body, you know, he was still able to, you know, kind of like Jaromir Jagr did, stick his ass out, box out players, and maintain puck possession. And you usually don't see that from a 19-year-old kid that's usually, you know, considered to be an offensive player. So I think the upside on Matt Patra is through the roof with the hockey sense. He's never going to be like an elite sniper. He's not going to be a Nate McKinnon flying down the middle. No. But, you know, a good, solid top six two-way centerman, I think, is probably the scouting report for you know, Matty Patra's potential.
Patra and Mrkulov both have one word: confidence. They are very confident with the puck. The plays they make, Mrkulov makes a lot of confident plays in Providence, and that's what you really want to see from those types of players.
Yeah, and I think that word also applies well to our other blue chip prospect in the forwards down in Providence, Fabian Lysell. You know, I think that he's been receiving a lot of scrutiny in the past, whether fairly or unfairly, from head coach Ryan Mugenal. What is your take on Fabian Lysell? Who do we have here? Do we still have that blue chip forward prospect?
Well, he's nearing 50 points right now in the AHL as a 21-year-old. That's pretty good. So, and he's for like 22, I think it's like 22 U22 players. He's like first. He's like first behind I think Maverick Bork and Logan Stankoven of the Texas Stars in points. So he's producing. When it comes to like his draft year, he's first in AHL scoring. Mugenal had a recent interview post game. He said he's looking better. Like he looks a lot better. He's making confident plays. As I said, confidence is a big step forward with what you're looking for. I've watched him. I think I watched almost every game of his in the WHL. Obviously, I was concerned how he would use his speed to compete with players in the AHL than he did in the WHL. I also thought the goal scoring would be interesting, but the goal scoring is fine. He just rips it when he wants to. His passing on the power play is improved. His skating is unbelievable. If you watch him skate, it's really fun to watch. He's probably the best skater in the system, if I had to guess. He needs to utilize it maybe a little bit better. At the beginning of the year, one thing he got criticized for a lot this year, and I think it was fine to get criticized for, and he should, was the one-on-four stuff. He would just skate into these, like in the WHL, he would do it here and there, and it would sometimes work because you're playing against younger guys. Now you're playing against people that are way older than you in the pros, in the AHL. That's not going to fly. So, but when it comes to him, he's now entering the zone on the boards, looking for a man, which is what he used to do in the SA. One of the things he did in the SHL when he was drafted, his draft year, he would enter the zone, halt, step on the brakes, look for the open man. This would create a lot of space in the zone because in the SHL, the ice is bigger. And you can still do it in North America, in my opinion. And you would create a lot of space and a lot of opportunities for forwards coming up the ice. And he's starting to do it again. And he's getting a lot of assists. He's got like 35 assists on the year or something like that now. He's a good playmaker. It's what he does. He had a tic-tac goal the other night with Mrkulov and Brown. It's coming along with him. It's looking better and better every night. And it needs to continue that way for him to reach the NHL level. And I think next year he'll have a really good shot at making the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Other couple players I want to throw at you. John Beecher, what's your take? Was he a cap casualty? Do you think that's why he ended up going back down to Providence? I don't think he necessarily deserved to be sent down based upon his performance at the beginning of the year.
Yes and no. I'll say 60% yes, cap casualty, 40% no. I think he agreed recently. I try and watch as many of the interviews with the younger players as I can because there are stuff they say that are interesting. And he said, yeah, I needed to work on a little bit of offense. The offense was kind of like not there, but the defense was clearly there. He was really a great penalty killer, great faceoff guy. He's the best faceoff guy right now
on the team,
say everywhere. Unless they get some like free agent out of nowhere that turns into better than him. He's the best faceoff guy. He was the best faceoff guy in Providence last year. Best faceoff guy when he was with Michigan. There's value there. When it comes to him, I think the offense needed to work on. At first, when he got sent to Providence, you could tell by his game he wasn't really producing. He was looking a bit sluggish out there. And then he was like, "All right, I gotta really show who I am." And he did. He was looking really good his final like three games in Providence before he got called back up. He had an unbelievable last game. I think that's what earned him the call up again. Obviously, with the trade deadline pass, there's like an emergency recall. So he might get sent down again because of more cap casualties and all that. But I do think it was a cap casualty because they needed a defense. They still need his defense on the penalty kill, and they need his defense in games. And he's just been the past two games, he's just been a force out there for what they need him for.
Yep, and he got one of those nice goals. I mean, I have to give a big shout-out to Andrew Peak for making that play happen when he came down the right side and found Johnny Beecher in a really intelligent place. And, man, if Beecher hit the post and didn't finish that, like, that would have been rough.
Yeah.
All right, well, excellent. So really appreciate you coming on, talking prospects. We'd love to have you on again. Again, guys, today we had Rob Chalmers, Cohen's Hockey. You can find him at Ivan. That last Ivan is LVAN. No. So make sure you toss him a follow and subscribe to his Substack. Thanks again for joining today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. We'd love to be on again one day.
Absolutely. All right. And we're also going to go ahead and wrap up today's episode right now. So thank you very much for tuning in to episode 33 of the Two Pad Stack podcast. We will see y'all next week. Peace.
You've been listening to the Two Pad Stack. Our passion is hockey. From Beer League to the Bruins, we friggin' love it. We love the Patriots too. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We know we had a blast. Make sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on Twitter and TikTok at TwoPadStackPod. And find the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by searching TwoPadStack. See you next time on the TwoPadStack.
This concludes our broadcast day. Click.